The Volume.
Jenkins and Jones is presented by FanDuel Sportsbook. There's no better place to bet the action than on FanDuel Sportsbook during the football season. Tons of reasons why I love betting the NFL on FanDuel Sportsbook. It's America's number one sportsbook. It's easy to use, it's fast, safe, and secure, and it has fast payouts as quick as 2 hours. There's also so many bet types, including same-game parlay bets, live betting, player props, and futures. FanDuel is making it easy for everyone to bet this season with a bunch of promotions that they'll be sharing all season long on our podcast. If you've been listening along, you've heard a lot of those. There's risk-free bets and same-game parlay bets, enhanced odds markets, and more. If you're new, just download the FanDuel Sportsbook app to get started now and sign up with promo code J&J so they know we sent you. That's J&J. Disclaimer, must be 21 and over and present in Arizona, Colorado, Connecticut, Indiana, Michigan, New Jersey, Tennessee, Virginia, or West Virginia. Gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER. See full terms and conditions at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Welcome to Jenkins and Jones on the Volume Podcast Network. It is Thursday, January 20th, and we've got all kinds of great stuff to talk about, including the Jenkins and Jones review of VelociPastor, which was maybe the greatest movie of the 2000s, a cultural moment. This is what Game of Thrones was supposed to be, VelociPastor.
Shut the fuck up.
As always, Jenkins and Jones is hosted by my good friends, Dragonfly Jones, a.k.a. Tyler.
Hey, everybody. How we doing?
LeJethro Jenkins, a.k.a. John.
What's up, Bubba? Y'all talking about VelociPastor?
I'm Cardi B, a.k.a. Mike, and we're recording early because we set our alarms Wednesday morning to wake up before the sun to talk shit about Rudy Gobert.
Rudy. Rudy, the motherfucking saga continues. The Rodney Dangerfield of the NBA. The no respect. I have never seen a three-time defensive player of the year get so disrespected. We can add Stanley Johnson to the long list of guys who don't respect him, along with KD, along with Ant Edwards, along with Bron in a roundabout way, because Stanley Johnson said Bron gave him the scouting report, you know? So it's just... But in all seriousness, though, I do think
Let's not be serious.
No. His point is about to be horrific.
Okay. Let's go.
I do think, in all seriousness, you know, it is time to have a bit of a serious conversation about Rudy Gobert. And, you know, we'll get to the slander later. You know, we do that enough with Rudy. But the truth of the matter here is that the dude just can't guard the perimeter, bro. I mean, you know, we saw how Steph had that grown-ass man spinning in circles like a four-year-old playing helicopter. You know what I'm saying? We saw how Terrence Mann and Reggie Jackson played that man off the court in an elimination playoff game, right? We saw Stanley Johnson, a 10-day contract guy, hunting him out and busting his ass the other night. You know what I'm saying? And like I said, that's the scouting report on Rudy. Hunt him out, get him on the perimeter, and go to work. Now, another truth about Rudy here. You know, like I said, we're gonna be a little serious here. Another truth about Rudy is he is a phenomenal rim protector, okay? I'll give him that. A generational rim protector. He's still a liability on the perimeter, though, and both of these things can be true, right? And, you know, you can say that isn't all on Rudy. You can say that he's being failed by his personnel, by his coaching. You can say that, you know, they should have better defenders on that roster and better scheming to prevent him from getting exposed like this. And I do think there's some validity there. But what's interesting about Gobert to me here is – he's somewhat of a case study on how the game has evolved, right? Because it's not enough to just solely be a rim protector in today's NBA anymore. You know, you have to hold your own on the perimeter too. You know, we're in the positionless era now where every position can dribble, shoot, and create, you know, which has led to like the most spacing we've ever seen the game have. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, in the 90s, 2000s, your rim protector didn't need to be a force on the perimeter as well, you know what I'm saying? Like when the Jazz and the Heat played in the 90s, Karl Malone wasn't spotting up in the corner and pulling PJ Brown out there so Stockton could, you know, hunt out Zoe, and you know what I'm saying, like they hunt out Rudy, right? So, you know, that's what's interesting about this to me, you know what I mean? So because, you know, these islands on the perimeter that wings are throwing Rudy on, they didn't exist back then. You know, they do now. And in today's NBA, your rim protector has to be able to hold his own, you know, when a perimeter player tries to throw him in one of those islands. You take a look at today's best rim protectors. You know, Giannis, AD, Embiid, you know, they can all step out there and hold their own on the perimeter. DeAndre Ayton, you know, he's a young buck who can protect the rim and hold his own on the perimeter. The kid out in Cleveland, Evan Mobley. Well on his way to winning Rookie of the Year, protects the rim and defends the perimeter too. Because that's the direction in which the game has progressed, which is why I say that, you know, Gobert is an interesting case study here, because although he's a fucking revelation as a rim protector, him not being able to guard the perimeter makes him a bit of a relic in today's NBA too.
It's a pick and roll league, and he can't guard the fucking pick and roll. Also, Murray played his ass off the court too. Let's not forget about him as well. Dog, it's just like he has three deep defensive players of the year. He's going for a fourth. Ben Wallace has four. Are we going to, like, we're putting him in that rarefied fucking air right there with Ben Wallace? You know what I'm saying? Like, dude, LeBron told fucking Stanley Johnson,
the ink is still wet on a 10-day contract.
10-day contract. Young man, that is food. Go hunt, my nigga. You know what I mean? To the defensive fucking player of a year, a fucking 10-day? Get that shit the fuck out of my fucking face. You know what I'm saying? Y'all are making the defensive – y'all just throwing away defensive player of the year's in. You know what I'm saying? Giving it to a man that can't guard the perimeter in a time where you have to, where it's more than important. It's a must. You know what I mean? Because he's good at the fucking rim. Stop with the bullshit, bro. He ain't that. You know, he's not him, G. You know what I mean? Stop playing. You know, We're you know, I said not get serious, but I'm seriously not fucking with this shit. It bothers me. It's weird.
I actually think Tyler was almost too nice, because he's a great rim protector when they're in system. When a team does what the Lakers did, I mean, Stanley, like, there's the old Mike Tyson thing. Everyone has a plan until you get punched in the face, right? Stanley Johnson's version of punching Rudy Gobert in the face was putting his shoulder in his chest in the fucking restricted zone. And Rudy Gobert just went flying out of frame, bro. Like, I mean, he was, if he has to guard the perimeter, he's also food under the rim when he's ISO'd out. Jokic isn't killing him on the perimeter. He gets fucking dunked on under the rim too. So when he's in system against a team that doesn't have a powerful center, absolutely, you know, but is that what the defensive player of the year is? A dude that Bron, the most calculating basketball mind we've maybe ever seen on a basketball court, looks at this dude and tells Stanley Johnson, go win us the basketball game, after Russ already sized him up. And Russ has not been able to finish against the pool
when's
noodles
the last time he
in
did
drills
that
this year, bro.
Bro,
Russ has
tricky
not been able to finish against
shit,
air. He made the top half of Rudy's body disappear on that dunk, bro.
Dude, did you see how excited he got when he just saw Rudy was buck naked under the rim? Yes. A generational fucking rim protector. Bitch, this is money. I'm finna do this, man. You know what I mean?
But think
this
about what John said. That's Ben Wallace. That's
bro,
Ben Wallace in a defensive
bro,
player of the year.
He's not even thinking about that. That's not
and
a
that's
thought when Ben Wallace
Russ
is under the rim. Fuck you mean, dog. I just can't stand that shit, bro. Throwing these shits away.
And what I hate about the Gobert dialogue is that snobby basketball Twitter, they act like, you know, you're casual if you say that you know, the dude's a liability at times, right? So, motherfucker, KD and Bron have said the same shit. You calling them casuals, too? You know what I'm saying? Like, KD hopped on a podcast and said, that man got played off the court in the playoffs, bro. He is not that guy. You know what I mean?
Bro, if you're getting played off the court when you're actually having to play good teams, how the fuck? I don't give a fuck about the regular season. I know it's a regular season fucking award, but dog, when you're playing good teams and you're consistently playing off the court, stop playing, G. You know what I'm saying? Like, dog, we have voter fatigue when it comes to the MVP and all this shit. When are we going to get voter fatigue for this motherfucker? And my nigga Nick Hinkle said that shit. When are we going to get voter fatigue for this motherfucker? You know what I mean? Because it's about goddamn time. We've seen all the flaws, and we'll just give him defensive player of the year. You know what I mean? No, stop it. It's over with. Let's stop playing ourselves. We're going to look back and be like, damn, we was tripping. I'm not going to, but the, you know what I'm saying? It's just, it's wild. It's wild to see.
I don't have a DPOY.
It's consistent.
Vote,
how many years has
it been? I did not vote for Gogurt if I did.
What I'm saying, but how many series have we seen him like consecutively played off the court? Wasn't it like 2 or 3 years back to back where he was played off the court?
Well,
because
just,
he can't guard.
I just genuinely don't understand how your runaway repeat DPOY when another guy at your position has such a dominant run against him as Jokic does. I really honestly, like, if Michael Jordan was a good system defender but who was food for three other two guards in the NBA, no one's talking about Michael Jordan's defense the way. It's a really weird blind spot to totally overlook. In the way that people talk about him, I don't get it, and I don't feel it's great. I enjoy making fun of him, and I don't think we have any Jazz fans who listen to the podcast. So,
and if we do, I don't give a fuck. And if we do, they know what time it is.
Orange
they,
rock
and
for
we
me
have
from Twitter. About to be an
we have realistic people that fuck with us, like pretty reasonable. They probably look at this like, bro, he's fooled as well. If we do have Jazz fans, they know what time it is.
Someone tweeted as a joke, but you've both brought it up, but I really think there's something to it. If LeBron James is telling Stanley Johnson on a 10-day contract, that is your matchup, go one-on-one with the DPOY, that should be disqualifying to some extent for the way people are talking about you as a defender. That's a real thing.
A man on a 10-day?
There are some ways in which
you're getting hunted. Yeah, he is hunting you. You know what I mean?
There are ways in which basketball is a very complicated sport, you know, the analytics and all this other stuff. And then there's a way that it's still the same sport we played in elementary school. And if anyone told the weakest dude on their team, go at you, that means something about you. It means
that. They treated that man like he Lou Will on defense. They treated him like he was 6'1", 100 pounds.
Ron was flipping through the records at the fucking used record store, found Rudy Gobert, and his face lit up. Yes, this is the one.
This is the one. You know what I mean? Well, I'm finna eat today. Rudy's guarding me.
I know exactly what wine I'm drinking while I listen to this.
We finna put that Rudy pack in the air.
I know one thing. Brown wouldn't have told Stanley Johnson to hunt out Embiid. He wouldn't have told him to hunt out Giannis. You know, he wouldn't have told him to hunt out
Ben Wallace.
Right?
Fuck no.
Who he's getting to, you know, close to with defensive players of the year. He would not have said that for sure. Sheesh.
Rudy was sick of your shit, man. That's basically it.
Point blank, period.
Point blank, Rudy.
We're tired.
We've had enough, goddammit.
The whole pandemic is your fault, first of all.
First of all.
Bro. Bro. The universe, I don't even want to get into that.
All right. Let's talk about, we were just talking about this before we hopped on. We had a couple of listeners tweeted us asking us to make sure we talked about Lucy Harris, which I think is kind of an obvious must. And I'm going to just own up to this right up top. I'm like offended that Lucy Harris was not more famous in her life. I have seen so many people reading obituary stories about her after her passing a couple of days ago, or I think yesterday, actually, on Tuesday. Anytime you talk about women athletes from like the pre-Title IX days or right as Title IX was passed, you're always going to hear some absolutely crazy, reckless shit about what they had to go through to do what all high school girls really in America get to do now and just be on a basketball team. But Lucy Harris, incredible pioneer, the first woman to score in the Olympics, was drafted by the Jazz as a black woman drafted into the NBA.
26 and 17 off 60%. They should have drafted her. She was 6'3", too. That's like 7'1" these days.
Right.
Yeah. Shit.
So incredible legacy, and definitely wanted to talk about her. And I just wanted to talk about, like, I think this is something we need to be better at. And I actually think we need to be better at it in the sport of basketball, is talking about pioneers. And, you know, with all due respect to our producer, Jackson, says, like, with all due respect to James Naismith, like, the people who helped normalize playing basketball for black women, that's so much more of an important contribution in many ways than the first dude to say, let's nail the bucket to the piece of wood. You know what I mean?
I totally agree. There's no reason every basketball fan should know who Dave DeBuscher is and not know who she is. You know what I mean? That's for sure a failure on, I don't know whose part here, the basketball historian's part or whatever, but we should not have found about her, you know, in her passing like this.
I mean, we talk basketball. We cover basketball. And we didn't know who she was. So it's not like just like some dudes. It's just like, oh, that, no, we should have known. It is wild to me that I didn't know. And then I'm reading all these things she accomplished. Like Mike said, first basket in Olympics women's basketball. I don't know who this woman is. That's wild as hell.
I've talked about this with I'm very interested in the history of sports, and I wrote a book on the history of basketball in Long Beach, and got a chance to talk to a lot of players. I mean, we could literally go back to the early 1900s for women playing basketball in Long Beach, because it was all farmers' daughters, and so there was no, oh, they're delicate, whatever. There was an expectation that they were going to be workhorses, right? And so, like, Polly had a 6'8" center in 1908 on the girls' basketball team.
Wait. Okay, wait. Hold up.
They were playing against USC in, like, the early 1900s. And when you talk to, obviously, she's not around, but when you talk to, like, Penny Toler, who went to Long Beach State and was the first woman to score a point in the WNBA, the stories that they have to tell about the discrimination they faced as women and as black women trying to do something new is shocking. And it is like a Lucy Harris should have, we were just talking about, she should have been presenting the NBA 75 list, right? Nice. Like she should be incorporated into the history of the sport by the gatekeepers who are sort of deciding who gets to be a part of those presentations and stuff like that. Because it really is like, you know, put her on inside the NBA. The NBA have her come to a playoff. Like, it's not, there's a couple different places you can put people so that everyone who's paying attention to basketball hears about them and knows about them. And she definitely deserved that treatment. I'm glad she's getting the recognition she's getting in her passing, but clearly deserved more than, you know, she got in the last few years of her life, in my opinion.
And it's such a layup, though. It's not like they would have had to force anything. Like, it would have been so easy to include her in these things, but. One thing I noticed, seventh round. They had seven rounds of draft. Like, did they redo the entire team?
I mean,
like,
it,
how did – from it's like 11 teams, yeah. 15
yeah,
teams
that,
or something.
That's a lot of rounds. But she said she passed on that because she was pregnant. So
pregnant, right.
It sounds like football shit where seventh round is just basically an invite to camp. You know what I'm saying? So,
oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, she also said, and I respected this because she was a trailblazer who – I've been reading feature articles about her. That NBA.com had a feature article about her, and you know the owner of the Jazz at the time said that it was something of a publicity stunt. She was the greatest women's player ever. It was a late round draft pick. They wanted to be able to say that they drafted her, and she was being interviewed about this like 30 years later, and she was laughing at the idea of her going up against Wilt. You know, she was she's not someone who it was trying to elevate herself. Like she didn't have it. She clearly didn't have an ego. She still had a sense of humor and everything, but her place in history, like she deserves to be the person who has that place in history. Like John mentioned the stats are crazy.
And that's her average. Imagine what she was doing her senior year, you know, like her last year in college. Like that's crazy.
All right. RIP Lucy Harris. Let's talk about Steven Adams. What a signature move to have your signature move being lifting another human being off the floor and walking him away like luggage.
It was such a huge human being. It was such a Steven Adams moment because when he's been in the middle of so much, you know, scuffles or whatever, and he's always the, come on, dude, you really don't want to do this guy. Right. like that's just his whole, you know, MO. And he just lifted that grown ass man up. And calmly removed him from the situation. That shit, bro. I saw someone tweet. Someone said that Steven Adams is from the Memphis part of New Zealand. And that was fucking perfect.
No, for me, it's just the calmness of it. He just, you know, he doesn't think twice. He just picks the man up. The man actually patted him on his back. Like, okay, we good.
He burped.
You know
him.
What I mean? He didn't even use his words. He didn't want to, you know, you don't want to. He didn't say no. He just tapped on his back. Yeah, we good. You know, appreciate you. I was tripping, my boy. You know what I mean? You know, like, but I love to see it every time. I'm just as amazed every single time because these aren't regular dudes. He's not picking up like a he's not picking up Chris Paul. And, you know, these are other giant humans that duck when going through doors that he's making look like fucking Tonka toys. You know what I mean? It's just incredible to see.
He is from New Zealand. He does have the tattoos. And I will tell you, in Long Beach, it is understood that Polynesian people will either end the fight one way or the other. if they decide you're not fighting anymore, you're not fighting anymore. If they decide to end the fight the other way, they're going to end the fight the other way. the fact that he's breaking up fights between the tallest collection of people anywhere on planet Earth, the same way I break up fights between my third grader and kindergartner. All right. Over here with you. Oh, that's a superpower I would love. It's the funniest thing. It's the funniest thing to me every time he does it. Did you guys see the clip of Kyrie talking to the fan in Cleveland last night?
Fans are
the
fucking
clip of
terrible.
Kyrie like telling the truth, being actually reasonable.
Yeah.
That clip.
Yes. What'd you think of that, Tyler?
Fans are fucking ridiculous. Fans are fucking ridiculous. Okay, so, you know, some fan was heckling Kyrie, and Kyrie, you know, clapped back and said, I gave y'all a championship. Y'all motherfuckers are ungrateful. And this motherfucker says, it was only one. Motherfucker, it's the only one you've ever had, bitch. Like,
bitch? It's one of one.
What? Motherfucker, where are your other ones then? You know what I mean? It was only one. Motherfucker, get your weak ass out of here, dog. Yeah, but fans are fucking terrible, man. But you know what? I think that gave us a lot of insight into Kyrie too. You know, Kyrie, his whole kind of thing is he never has really felt fully appreciated for what he's done. And you know, moments like that probably validate that. You know, I do think he's a bit off base with that a lot of times. I think a lot of people fully appreciate Kyrie for the outstanding basketball player who he is. But you know, shit like that, you know, that would totally feed into your confirmation bias.
I kind of believe you can't appreciate Kyrie enough. I think he just knows his worth. I just feel like, dog, like I feel like, you know, Kyrie's that good of a player. Like he is that special and that skilled. But anyway, dog, yeah, fuck fans. I've had an issue with fandom ever since. Like I would say over the last 3 or 4 years, it's been hard to sympathize with fans in any way. You know, the way they treat the players is ridiculous, you know, in ways that are way more serious, but just one, shut the fuck up. You know what I mean? Like, you know, it's just, you shouldn't even be able to talk to Kyrie, fuck nigga. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's ridiculous.
It's major incel energy from a fucking basketball fan. Like,
he had nothing else to say, though.
Yeah, right.
That's more
what
it
he
was.
Just didn't
it was just
know,
like,
he
just
right.
said, it's just one. He probably knew he was saying some dumb shit.
He was surprised Kyrie said something back to him.
Right, right.
And
he saw Kyrie when he said
his feet.
It's just one. Kyrie walked away. All right, I'm talking to a real weirdo here, bro. Like, you know, like I ain't even going. Even Kyrie was like, this nigga weird. I ain't gonna waste my time with this one. I'm on page 17 of YouTube. He on page 36. You know what I mean? I'm out of here.
Yeah, Kyrie walked away because he realized he was talking to a lion, not a sheep. Scary. That's why he walked away. Let's talk about each win means that much more in the NFL playoffs. That's why FanDuel Sportsbook is hooking new customers up with 30-1 enhanced odds for the divisional playoffs. Bet $5 to win $150 on any team to win any divisional playoff game. I am a reverse jinxer, and I am a huge Niners fan, which means I would pick the Packers to win their divisional round game. Hosting the 49ers, I also do actually think that they're going to win, but I would pick them because of the reverse jinx properties of said pick. If I were going with some game props, I would just assume that Aaron Rodgers is going to have a statement FU game to the Packers management that he dislikes, so I would take all of his player props on the overs. You can do this too. Just sign up for FanDuel Sportsbook and make a deposit to claim your 30-1 enhanced odds. There's no better place to bet the NFL playoffs than on America's number one sportsbook. It's a simple and easy-to-use app with generous promotions every day. It's safe and secure with the best-in-class customer service. And when you win, FanDuel will pay your winnings in as little as 2 hours. Already have FanDuel Sportsbook? FanDuel is hooking all customers up with $50 when you refer a friend, plus your friend will get $50 too. Don't miss your chance to win $150 off a $5 bet when you use promo code JNJ when signing up. Download the FanDuel Sportsbook app and use promo code JNJ, that's J ampersand J, and pick your divisional playoff team before kickoff. Disclaimer, must be 21 and over and present in Arizona, Colorado, Connecticut, Indiana, Michigan, New Jersey, New York, Tennessee, Virginia, or West Virginia. New users only, $10 first deposit required, must wager in designated offer market, max bonus $150, bonus for Tennessee users fulfilled in site credit within 72 hours. Tennessee site credit expires 14 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See full terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. Let's talk about the Dallas Cowboys, Tyler. Literally nothing would please me more than to wake up early on Wednesday to talk shit about Rudy Gobert and the Dallas Cowboys. The Dallas Cowboys, the Rudy Gobert of the NFL playoffs.
Rudy Gobert, that's exactly who those motherfuckers are. Dog, the Niners went up 23-7, and I tweeted out, you know, here's the part where the Cowboys mount a comeback and, you know, and blow it all in the final moments just to make this loss even more painful for their fans. We all know the script. And lo and behold, it happened. That's who the Cowboys are. Fandom is fucking stupid, but being a Cowboys fan is even stupid on the sports fandom scale, because there's nothing worse than giving your fan base false hope and then just snatching that away from them all the time. And that's exactly what the Cowboys do every time on the big stage.
Your tweet was correct not once, but like four times. They lost the game like four times in the last 5 minutes of the game. It was unbelievable.
Dog, that when that motherfucking ref came out there and said, the game's over, I fucking lost it. I was in my crib hollering. I ain't never seen no shit like that, dog. I ain't never seen a ref just not explain why the game was over. Motherfucker just said, bro, y'all got to go. That's it, man. And hauled ass.
Oh shit! I'm a Niners fan, and I was very stressed out because it felt like Kyle Shanahan was gonna cowboy the Cowboys, and the Niners managed to barely not lose the game. But I had so many friends, I think some of whom don't even know that we know each other in real life, who, as I was stressing out in various group chats, people kept sending me that tweet, I was just evergreen. Yes, I'm familiar with how correct at Dragonfly Jones usually is, but I'm still feeling fucking stressed over here.
No, the Cowboys are going cowboy. Don't ever stress about that. I say that as someone who has been in their division, you know, for the years I was an NFL fan. So, nah, Cowboys ain't never nothing to worry about, dog.
Greatly appreciate it. All right, it's now time for the debut of a new segment on Jenkins and Jones. I'm very excited. We need
some
horns.
Yeah, some goddamn, what's troubadours or whatever the fuck? Yeah.
Some rap. We need something. I don't know. Anyway, we're going to introduce a new segment called What Does Mick Cronin Look Like? Tyler, take it away.
I cast my vote as an uncooked drumette wingette. You know what I'm saying?
Drumette. Like,
an uncooked drumstick winger. One of those ones with the little ass wing that's like with the little ass bone that's like 2 inches long. One of them little straggly motherfuckers. That's what he looks like to me.
When I looked at this nigga, he looked like a blowfish right before they finna blow. You know what I mean? Like, that's when I was like, this nigga face looked like he got another 4 inches of space in it. You know what I mean? Where he can really puff that motherfucker up. That's what I was thinking. Like, when I saw his face, so yeah, that's what I'm going with this week.
He looks to me like a naked mole rat who has just seen the summer sun for the first time.
He's so red to be pale. It's a weird mix right there. You know, the mix of red and clearness is really odd.
All right, that was What Does Mick Cronin Look Like. We'll be back. Stay tuned next week.
Next week.
We will be back.
To be continued.
We on your dun, ass, man.
right.
Let's talk about Gary Chambers, candidate, recently declared candidate for Senate in Louisiana, whose entire ad introducing his campaign was based on legalizing weed. The ad is 37 seconds long. The idea was that every 37 seconds, someone in America is arrested for weed possession. which I have to say shocked me a little bit to hear that that's still the case in 2022. So
you ain't
I'm
been
glad.
In the South, G.
Huh?
Or the Midwest.
What's that?
You ain't been in the South or the Midwest. That didn't shock me, G.
Correct.
4 years ago, I was hiding my weed driving around. You feel me? Tucking that shit away.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, but y'all, I mean, I remember coming out here in like early 2010s before it was dummy legal and like, you know, like going to Coachella and they're like, hey, you want a weed card? You know what I mean? And like, it took me 45 minutes to get one or my homegirl jumping out the whip, blowing, you know, on fucking Melrose, like walking down the side. Nobody really tripped. Bro, they still tripping in the South and Midwest, G. You know what I mean? At least, you know, the areas where I was living in. So, yeah.
I want to say that's a phenomenal ad, and that is an issue I would absolutely be a one issue voter on. like it was a toss up between him and another, you know, Democrat on who I wanted to win that primary. Legalized guy for sure gets the vote, dog. Real shit.
I think the thing is too with politicians, they always run as the person that they think you want and not as who they are or who they will be. I believe 100% that bro. This motherfucker is this motherfucker. He is Scarface to me. Yeah. Not the movie Scarface, Texas Scarface.
Right.
I believe everything that came out of Scarface's mouth when he was rapping.
Bro,
I believe everything this dude said too.
He rolled that bitch up in a backwood. You know what I'm saying? If he wanted to be cute, he'd have rolled it in a joint and some papers. He rolled that bitch in a backwood. He was out there smoking Groot, dog. You know what I'm saying?
Like, that was a pterodactyl toe that motherfucker was smoking. Yeah. You know what I mean? And he did close-ups on it, multiple of them. Like, yeah, I'm really smoking this shit. He is really him. I would vote for that. You feel me? Off the strength of that, you know what I mean? That I know who I'm voting for, actually. You know what I mean?
Get a dude who smells like backwoods on the Senate floor, bro. That's the 2022 need.
For the culture, baby. We need it. You feel me? Blowing one down in the car before he pull up, you feel me?
Yes, sir. Other Tyler hit me with the stat that 68% of Americans are in favor of fully legalized weed, which is shock. I don't know what else 68% of Americans agree on in 2022. Yeah. But that's a insanely high number for that not to be reflected in our laws and a indictment, obviously, of a variety of aspects of American governance and culture.
I mean, Americans are capitalizing off of jails. How else we gonna get niggas in jail if weed's not illegal? You know what I mean? So a lot of these areas, you know what I'm saying?
It was surprising to me, though, because I don't think in Southern California – I mean, I knew what weed smell was in like elementary school, because there's just never been a time that it wasn't like in the air in Long Beach, or you'd be parked you'd be in traffic next to someone smoking weed. You know what I mean? Bro. Like, so that's crazy to me that it's still that way in the South and the Midwest.
I'm gonna tell you when I first realized what weed smoke smelled like. First time I smoked. Right. Okay. So my parents were divorced. Right. I used to go, you know, spend weekends with my pops. First time I smoked, I was like, "Yo, this smells like my dad's apartment." Right. And so that was a fucking light bulb moment right there, dog. My pops was out here blowing it down, bro.
That's fucking hilarious.
Yeah. Respect to a real one.
Hell yeah.
My dad's condo after he and my mom split up didn't smell like weed. It smelled like pot because I had fucking hippie parents, so it was always pot, you know. I don't know why I find the word pot to be like physically revolting. I get like, if I hear someone say pot, it's just like, ugh.
I feel like when I hear pot, I think of like hippies, you know, smoking out of like pipes. Like, you don't roll pot up, you know, in a backwood. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Yeah.
right. That you roll that up in paper. You feel me? Raggedy ass joint. But I remember the first time I spoke with my pop, I felt like, okay, he thinks I'm a man. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I would walk in there with my pants rolled up, my ankles showing and shit. He'd be like, "There's no man in you." But I'm like, damn, you feel me? I'm just, you know, I can't show no ankle in this motherfucker. There's no man in you. So when he rolled up the joint and blew one with me, I was like, okay, maybe he sees it. You feel me? Yeah,
John, do you want to, speaking of weed, do you want to tell people about this real-time shipwreck shit you've been on, bro? This is the wildest use of technology I've heard of in quite some time.
I haven't tapped in all the way. Me and weed going to have a real, you know, enjoyable experience probably this evening, actually. Because I filled it with VelociPastor yesterday evening or this past evening. But yeah, like, basically – They're real-time simulations, you know, like minute-by-minute simulations of sinking of ships. So, like, the SS Atlantic is, like, 20 minutes. The Titanic is 2.5 hours. You can jump into the SS Atlantic and watch. I mean, but, like, if you look at the simulation, like, you hear the waves. You see how it sunk, and it gives you, like, text telling you what happened when the whole time. So, like, as a motherfucker that just loves history, the weird shit like that, as well as getting high, I'm fully tapping in with that. The 2 hours, jumping right into the deep end for the Titanic, 2.5 hours. Me and weed gonna get real close right before it, and I'm just gonna have my mind blown for 2.5 fucking hours, and I'm so fucking excited about it. My homie Nick, you know, put me onto it. He watched the Titanic one like 3 or 4 times. You know what I mean? Like, I think with him telling me about it, I was excited. I mean,
is this
going to be exhilarating experience?
Is this a series? Like, are there other videos too like this? Or?
Yes, SS Atlantic. There's the one where I think the SS Atlantic is when the torpedo hit it. There's one with the torpedo. Yeah, I think that's the one. There's some. They get really specific, like saying like, "Hey, I think that with the SS Atlantic, it was moving so fast because like the brakes went out or the engine went out." And so when they were trying to let down the life rafts, like the people were just running into the water because you can't let down the life rafts while the boat is moving that fast. Also, there was one where the water was really choppy and it fucked up the boat, and like people didn't die like getting into the water; they were living, but the water threw them up against rocks. Like, I'm not watching those two while high, but the Titanic. It seems like stomach that while actually, yeah, but I think it's just interesting and knowing. I think the same thing with the one that the choppy water fucked it up. It was the same people that made it that made the Titanic, and they were boasting the same thing, like it's unsinkable, you know what I mean? And with the Titanic, there was supposed to be a drill where like the fire drill, that like, you know, just in case the boat's sinking. And the captain, like, canceled it on. So I'm like, yeah, right. Like, we don't need this the day of. You feel me? Crazy. But, yeah, man. So there's a bunch of weird facts in there that I'm going to just dive all the way into.
That captain is canceled.
Did you see the visual image of it? Did you tap on the link?
I like scrolled through it real quick just to see what the effects looked like, and yeah, it's crazy. But this is like,
I need an Oculus for type of historical simulations. You know what I mean? Could you imagine being high and watching this through an Oculus? Am I tripping?
This sounds like an experience.
There we go. I needed somebody to tap in.
Yeah, I might fuck with it too, man. We'll
see. No, I mean, Tyler, like 2 a.m., you know, you be up crazy hours. You know what I mean? The rest of the world sleep, you know, in VA. You feel me? You got two. I mean, just blow something down, get you some snacks. You know what I mean? And 2.5 hours is filled, baby, of just facts.
I just love the idea of using technology like for shit like this. Like we were talking about, I think we talked about this on the pod like last year.
Bro, look at Mike. First of all, look at Mike. This man is cozy tired.
Boy. I'm tired, dog.
Bro, his back is extra backing. You see how it's going up to the back of the hook on his head?
This is my exact slouch spot on this chair. Where I could put my head so it's just like you said, it's on the top of the cushion, not the back.
Right.
Of it.
It's crazy. Your head is resting on your back right now. But go ahead, G.
I'm in equilibrium right now.
Make your point.
I just I was like last year we talked about how all technology in humans' hands goes to do horrible things with porn first, and then ultimately it makes its way as the tech gets or it's all porn or war, right? And so, deepfake technology, the ability to do this with AI stuff to where people like us who don't know how to do visual effects could still manipulate things. It's like deepfake technology. It's obviously like 99% of what it's on the internet for is to do horribly misogynistic things and put women in videos that obviously
they aren't in, or whatever else.
Right. And, but the upside of it, there's a great podcast series on this called Brave New Planet. That's like, here's new technology. Here's the potential good stuff. Here's the potential bad stuff. And it's like, it's everything from, like stuff to help block the sun out, to fight climate change, to deepfake stuff. But one of the things they talked about was using this type of technology to help people who have Alzheimer's or other, you know, degenerative mental conditions to reconnect with things that, like, they could animate someone's wife from 40 years ago. Right. That you could do these different types of things. But also on the educational front, that imagine, like, if Somia, by the time she's in elementary school, if you know, because now look at technology now. My kid, my daughter has it. My daughter's in kindergarten. Maya has it. Right. She has a laptop at school. She has her own laptop.
That's good.
It's a public school. It's Long Beach. We don't live in Beverly Hills. Like, she has a laptop. Right. And so imagine if by the time Somia gets to elementary school, an Oculus or whatever the cheap Google knockoff of an Oculus is called at that time, the teacher goes, "We're going to ancient Egypt today." And all the kids actually experiencing it instead of reading about it, right? You know what I mean? They can walk around and they can go up to the people that look interesting to them and have a conversation. Like, that technology is, like, really coming along to be able to do shit like that. Like, there's some really cool non-Black Mirror shit that is coming with technology, hopefully, in addition to all of the horrible shit that's coming with it as well, you know?
I usually play things like old movies or things in the background while I'm working. I think I'm going to start playing these, like, have them up on the work screen. You know what I mean? Tapping a little bit, I think this is going to be my thing. I can just learn a little bit while cutting it, you know, while creating scripts and all that type of stuff. I'm really excited about this, guys. You just have no idea, okay, how I feel on the inside about this. No, I'm really excited for real.
Speaking of people with strong feelings on the inside, let's talk about the man of the claw. The Velocipaster.
The man of the claw.
Tyler, first of all, let me just say, Tyler, you hit it on the head. My only worry when we said we were going to watch this movie was that it was going to be bad in the wrong way, but it was bad in the right way. I thought you hit that on the head.
Yes, it was bad in the right. Like, I thought it was going to be a gore movie that was just terrible, but it's a comedy. You know what I'm saying? Like I knew it was going to be a movie that didn't take itself seriously, but this is a movie that clowns the shit out of itself. You know what I'm saying? Like the first scene where they just did the VFX car explosion. Yeah, yeah. I was like, what the fuck? But yeah, it was a fun ass movie. I would say I was like, near the end of the movie, I was like, okay, we didn't get enough Velocipaster in this. But the one scene that the Velociraptor came through, I feel like it totally made up for it. So yeah, it was as terrible as I wanted to be in all the great ways.
They spent $35,000 on this movie, and I bet $30,000 of it was on the suit for that final scene. Where you can literally see the hump in the dinosaur's back for where the actor's head is.
I feel like the entire time I'm looking like, where did this $35,000 go? I feel like they didn't spend half of that. You know what I mean? Like, that's what I was like, this cost $35,000? They pocketed a lot of that money, G. You know what I mean? A lot of that went to Crafty. You know what I mean? Lunch during the shots.
They had the In-N-Out truck. They had the double-double truck pull up every day.
Going crazy. That's where all the money went. You know what I mean?
Tamales. I love the part that killed me. Shar and I were just on the couch, like, dying hysterically for the whole, and it was at like an hour and 10 minutes, which is a perfect length for a terrible movie to be, by the way. 70 minutes. We get in and out, but the part where the old priest's wife inexplicably showed up to see him in Vietnam, and then literally turned into a bucket of corn syrup blood was like, I was screaming, bro. Like, what the fuck is this?
You brought this up, Mike, the first time we saw Velocipaster, and like, we see the mannequin's head rolled into this. Like, somebody probably grabbed it by the nostrils and eyes and, like, bowling ball rolled that into the scene. You know what I mean? Like, that was beautiful, actually. More of that, please. I like that type of funny when it's like we're just leaning all the way into the fact that, you know, there's nothing real about this.
The writers, the
Frankie Mermaid deserves a Best Supporting Actor Oscar. That motherfucker was in that movie for like 8 minutes, and it was all those 8 minutes were gold, bro.
The sandwich and, you know, bopper reference that, yeah, that was on it. I'd be rich if you bop like you ate them sandwiches.
I'm trying to remember the line that killed Char was when when he's talking to, when the Velocipastor is talking to his love interest and they're having the miscommunication about he thinks that they had sex last night. And then he says, "What are you talking about?"
Right.
And she says, "When you turned into a dinosaur and ate someone." I think he said what like 19 times.
He said, "What?" And then this the shot. What?
Anyway, the writer / director / executive producer of Velocipastor is currently raising money for Velocipastor 2. So very excited. Yeah. We'll keep everyone posted about future release. There are other movies like this on Amazon that were recommended to me because I watched this, including Llamageddon. Mm. Santa Jaws, about the Santa Claus of sharks. Hmm. John's not going for Santa Jaws.
No. Velocipastor made, I think that's my limit, guys. I mean, go on without me. I'll be okay. You know what I mean?
All right.
I got ships to sing. I gotta watch those. You feel me?
That's our time for Jenkins and Jones. We're going to go back to
before
sleep.
We shake, shout out to Leon Talley. You know what I mean? Creative director of Vogue 73 past. The dude was an icon. Special, man. I watched a doc on him, and what he did during his time here was amazing. So we losing a lot of greats over the, you know, it seems like, you know, as of recent, maybe I'm just old, but it's, you know, shout out to him, G. I was a big fan of his.
I mentioned that to my mom, feeling like more celebrities and more like respected people were passing away, and that she gave me like the saddest look, and she was like, that's
what it is.
Every year you're older, it's more people, you know what I mean? It's just like it's crazy. It's not something you'd ever think about as a kid, obviously, but it's crazy.
That's one thing I think about when it comes to like wishing my life away on some like, not on, I mean, like, I don't think about 10 years from now or like, hey, I wonder what's. I can't wait for 2 years from now, because you don't know who's not gonna be there. You know what I mean? So, I really don't think like that because I try to just enjoy the moment, because you can't. You know, yeah, these moments would be great, but you know who in the future. But who do you lose on the way to getting to those moments? So, I don't even think about the future like that. This is a sad way to end the pod.
That was fucking heavy. We opened up Rudy Gogert.
Rudy Gogert.
Y'all want to start clowning him some more? I know you got some more material. Who does Mick Cronin look like?
What flavor of Yoplait Gogert is...
Right. Strawberry, because he's delicious.
He's but fried anyway. Barbecue chicken.
Right.
All right, that's our time on Jenkins and Jones. Thank you for fucking with us. Thank you for hating Rudy Gobert with us. Thank you for learning with us and for making fun of the Cowboys with us. And thank you to the makers of Velocipastor. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.